In the startup world, where we value technology and experiment that leverage quick and dirty prototypes, what's the role for art and design? Especially for early stage startups, how should they utilize the power of design for their products or services? If you look at brands that are expanding to different markets, how can they develop a cross-cultural design mindset that helps them gain local recognition and avoid any sensitivities? During this week's episode, we'll discuss the value of design in early technology startups with Yijin Lu, an award-winning artist behind the Twitter fail whale and dumpling emoji, named as a Fast Company's most creative people in business and Microsoft's top 10 emerging leader in innovation. Yijin has helped hundreds of tech startups build their brand and their image and turn it into a competitive advantage. She believes that for technology companies, there are no B2B or B2C. They are only human to human. And art is the best vehicle to communicate the core values of the human behind the technology. Born in Shanghai, educated in Sydney, lived in London, currently based in San Francisco, Yijin will also share one of her passions, how to leverage art to reach the East and the West, and explain some of the cross-cultural campaigns that she has been involved in the past. This is Oscar Ramos. Join us to learn more about how tech companies can leverage art and design to resonate with users.
They don't think about their customer. They don't even know who their customer is.
How can women actually support each other?
Blockchain is essentially a very fancy database. You can do it now with what is existing today.
Like in China, it was a crazy thing. You know?
Mobile internet, mobile apps.
There was never lack of data in China. It was more of people who knows how to use data.
What strikes me is the lack of awareness of what it means to do an exit.
You're listening to the China Startup Pulse, your looking glass into the Chinese investment and startup ecosystem from the movers and makers themselves. Please don't forget to share and comment on whatever platform you use to listen to this podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the China Startup Pulse. Today, our guest is Yijin Lu. Welcome to the podcast, Yijin.
Thank you, Oscar. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great pleasure. Born in Shanghai, although right now in San Francisco, Yijin was educated in Sydney, Australia, London, UK, and just living right now in the US. She's an award-winning designer, entrepreneur, educator, bilingual speaker, and she has been named one of the most creative people in business by Fast Company, and also one of the top 10 emerging leaders in innovation by Microsoft. She's been specialized in topics of cross-cultural branding, design, innovation, was the first international collaborator at IDEO, although she became popular in the startup world because she was a designer behind the famous Twitter fail whale. And now the foodies also might know her because she was the designer behind the dumpling emoji. In the last decade, she has created iconic art for global brands like Disney and Microsoft and built brands for hundreds of tech startups. Yijin, sometimes when people think about startups, they always think about technology and they always think, well, technology is the most important thing. Then those that work in the startup world, we know that there's more beyond technology. You need to have a good technology, but if people cannot use it, that will not work. How does design come into that equation and bring another level of improvement in the whole experience of startup products?
That's a great question, Oscar. I think fundamentally, whatever you're working on, whether it's a technology company, it's a health tech company, or it's an education company, it's about narrative. It's about the storytelling of what your product is doing for people. And I love that Jack Ma has this really famous quote, whether you're B2B or B2C, it's always P2P, which is people to people. And so here, art is what makes us human. And art here is a very kind of broader concept. And design and art, in a way, is about creating an experience of how people can experience your product. In this case, if it's a tech company, creating an experience how people would experience the technology that you're offering. I think that being a storyteller, fundamentally, marketers, PR person, and also people who are working on the messaging, communication, it's all encapsulated in the form of art of storytelling. And so even when you pitch to a investor, right, it's still people to people. So it's about how you show up as a person. A lot of times we are investing in the company, not necessarily because of the technology. It is because of the technology is great, but also the person behind the technology is worth investing. And so how can you really showcasing the person behind the technology? And that's where art is coming into the frame. And so here, the art is not necessarily about a piece of art piece. It's about communication in the core of the value of the human that created that technology.
Sometimes when people think about the product, they think about particularly good products are designed with the user in mind, no? And they think about the different needs that the user have. They think about the about all the functional needs, no? And that tends to be like a very relevant initial starting point where, well, basically, if the user doesn't have a need or a desire for something, it's very unlikely that they will use it regardless of how well designed it is, how effective it is, etc. But as you move through this ladder, we're talking about functional needs. And what you were talking now, it is also, I mean, having something that is easy to understand by design, it's also a functional need. No? I mean, besides being able to solve the problem, you need to solve the problem in an efficient way, etc. Where does the emotional need come to place? And what is the role of that emotional need in the design?
In terms of the emotional needs, I mean, I can give you an example. Often I think that design has many roles to play in a tech company, not only user experience in terms of the product, right? The human experience, also connection on an emotional level, branding, that's another functionality. A lot of times we choose a particular product, not necessarily because of only the technology. Apple, for example, is a great use case. A lot of technology in the core, Apple has pretty much a similar core technology like other tech products. And the reason why that it stands out of the crowd is because of the design behind it, right? A lot of times it is how technology is being packaged in a way that shows people this connection, ergonomic design, user-centric design, or when we call in ideal philosophy, the human-centered design. Another example that could really showcase how powerful sometimes design can be is I'm going to use my own example, which is the Twitter fail whale. In this case, the Twitter fail whale was in a way a designed user experience for Aeropage. And if you look at traditional Aeropage, when the technology goes wrong, people get really frustrated because usually it's a line of code or a line of English words says something is wrong, please bear with us. And it's very functional, but it's not necessarily evokes any emotion.
I think you're actually going through very, I mean, please bear with us. I think that's already, in most cases, you actually have like a 404 error. And then most people is like, what's that? I mean, it doesn't, it's a really empty value, which I really think resonates a lot with what you were talking about communication and how communication is so important. But of course, I mean, you just communicated to somebody, sorry, something went wrong. And that's where I like where you bring in the Twitter fail.
Right. The whale, in some way, it shows people something is not quite right, right? Because the whale symbolized for the overcapacity issue. But it was using a metaphor that people could understand something was not quite right. But it's in a way, it's familiar, but it's also new. Instead of like addressing the problem and just say something is wrong, which clearly something is wrong. That's why the page is not loading. And people are smart enough. Your users sometimes are smarter than you think they are. And they can figure it out by not being able to load that page. But instead, you're actually using a way to connect with them on an emotional level. You show a humongous whale that was smiling. And even though it was a problem, but you're taking people to an emotional place, which is, hey, we have all these little birds working on this huge scalability issue. And it's whimsical. It's something that no other tech company at the time was doing. And instead of focusing on the problem, you actually redirect the energy of the user to something that is aspiring, which is, even though we have this huge capacity issue to work on, but we are taking you to a higher place. We're taking you to this place of dreaming into impossible dream come true. A whale can actually fly. And that's a very interesting redirection of energy, because often I think technology itself is pretty straightforward, but to Aero is human, because even though technology can be amazing, but they're made by human too. And You know, no human is perfect and we make mistakes. And so being human and letting people know that even though technology that we invented sometimes can be very powerful, but sometimes it also is a production of human. And being able to communicate that in a human way will allow people to resonate into what you do. It's like technology is not necessarily always invincible. And so that part is actually very powerful. Art and design and storytelling can be a soft power that tech company can utilize to resonate with their user and allow the user to see the human behind what's going on.
I know back in the day when that campaign, that design for an error page was launched, I don't know if there was any data that showed like any decrease of complaints or anything that you can correlate to a direct like changing the user behavior from that point of view or the frustration of something not working. But definitely that actually created a quite big campaign outside of the Twitter service itself that somehow held the company, you know, held the company on visibility, held the company on a different type of understanding of the users. So when you have these conversations with tech founders, and sometimes tech founders, they measure the progress of the company, the number of engineers or developers that they have in their companies, do you feel them, or how have you seen this evolution in terms of appreciation of design, not just as a nice to have, but as a really strategic discipline that the company requires?
Right. Usually what I did is when I was working at 500 Startups as the creative director, we have a lot of sessions with founders. And every single time when we have a new batch founders, I usually go and give a class and also office hours, which I also did with China Accelerator in Shanghai when I was coming back. And what I did in, you know, the past probably 8 years is to actually showcase to the founders the actual user case with data. Like you said, it's very important to show the success and the value of what art and design has brought to the company and show them the numbers. I usually use good examples of how I helped a startup company that was actually a batch zero company at 500 to work on a South by campaign when they pivot to another sort of content provider service. After the campaign, they were able to raise $3 million and they were able to be successfully acquired the year after. Also, how I helped a Australian sushi chain, which was almost to be bankrupt because of the financial crisis back in 2009, and how solely, without necessarily changing the actual sushi ingredient, also the product itself, but by changing the branding, by changing the name and messaging and the packaging, and also the store design, it became a $200 million turnover company and became the number one Australian and now overseas sushi chain. So I actually show them the actual data as well as the entire before and after imagery of the design to showcase the power of design in a not only artistic way, but also in a pretty tangible data points. Another example I usually love to talk about is how I also helped larger corporations like Disney Shanghai to work on their recruitment campaign. Not only show them how I solved the issue of being able to create the campaign that authentically Chinese, but also distinctly Disney, and how the end result is it was able to successfully recruit about 100,000 employees in China. So a lot of times, you know, the visuals can be very powerful, but it's always great to accompany with data to show the actual intrinsic value coming from the design and the art.
Sometimes when we talk with early stage startups, we talk about quick and dirty, you know, try to put something in front of users as soon as possible. And even I think it's Rafe Hoffman that said that if by the time you release your first product, you're not a little bit of ashamed of it, you're releasing too late. In China, the concept of releasing products that are imperfect and then iterate on them and improve them over time is extremely common everywhere. So when we're talking about design and making things look emotionally connected, something that people can like and that looks great, how is your advice to funders in this early stage in terms of balancing these quick and dirty and at the same time making things look good?
I love that question. I actually think it's a really interesting question. And I think that fundamentally, the reason why that, you know, this is an interesting question for me, because intrinsically, people think that if this is a early stage company, then it's always going to be quick and dirty. Like, that was kind of the concept of what an early stage company's product or app or website should look like. Because it's MVP, which is minimal viable product, it needs to be quick and dirty. No, it doesn't have to be like that. A lot of times you could find a good design team or really smart young designer. When I was just come out of the school, like actually literally just after I graduated, I was able to work with a CEO that is based in Florida. I was working remotely when I was in Sydney. I helped to create his startup, which is a pet lifestyle brand, completely out of scratch. And now it's a $170 million turnover company every year. And at the time, I was just coming out of school. And it was a great collaboration project for me. And I think that I learned so much, but also the founder got so much value by working with me. And I think the way that I look at it is we have to change the mindset, as in, you know, when we have a startup, if it's a new, either we will make it quick and dirty, the design will suffer. We can't afford to have very expensive, established design studio or design firm to work on this. No, it doesn't have to be like that. You can go find some really great talents. As long as you value design, you have an eye for good storytellers, go find them. They're everywhere. And I think that it's about whether you wanted to invest in the beginning and get it done in a way that it could be simple, it could be a small investment, but it goes a long way. So that's basically how I look at it. I think that a startup early stage company, sure, you don't have a lot of money to spend on design. So does other things. But to get it right in the first place, so that when you raise your Series A, Series B, Series C, you don't have to spend a whole chunk of money on redesign and rebranding. And so that's basically how I look at that question. I hope that helps.
Yep, it's a good one.
There's a really lot of great university graduates. And I remember I was being contacted when I was still a university student. To me, it was perfect because I was studying and then just towards graduation. This is also how I started my business. I was lucky enough to get that project because I have so much to work on. I had to work on the logo. I had to work on the packaging design. I had to work on the exhibition storefront design. So I get an entire project for a whole year that I don't need to find a full-time job. This is basically how I started the studio right after I graduate from university. So a lot of times I think that this is such a great deal for the startup founder CEO, but it was also a great deal for me because I was a young design graduate and this project allowed me to really exercise my design ability on a global level. My product design was featured on all these major design magazines, literally on the year that I was graduating. And that was a huge accelerator for me as a young designer, but it's also a huge win for the founder who just started out his startup, right? He doesn't have a huge budget, but at the time his budget was great for a design student. So it's a win-win situation. I think it is very important to know that there's design talent out there that is looking for great opportunity to work with you and work within your budget. And also, I think it was such a mutual beneficial sort of working relationship. To this day, I'm still friends with him. And when I first came to the US, it was just like a family. So I think that story basically illustrates that founders could really benefit a lot by spending a little bit time to do talent scouting if you think that's something that worth your time. And I think a lot of times that working relationship is not something money can buy.
Yep, totally with that. I mean, sometimes I think founders overestimate the value they can get from certain types of profiles, and there is really a win-win opportunity in terms of bringing young, hungry talent into certain positions that can help not just bring the capacity and the skills, but also bring the mindset and a different way of thinking about things. And talking about thinking, I mean, one of the key things that I really wanted to talk during this podcast, because I think that's one of the most interesting, unique aspects of your personality, is this cross-cultural mindset where you are Chinese that have studied and work overseas and have worked in very interesting, iconic projects in this space where you were trying to blend different types of cultures to make sure that you are appealing and respectful with different sensitivities. What is the most interesting thing for you about this type of work? Is this a challenge that you really enjoy and see the opportunity of creating something new? Or is this something sometimes that makes you like think a lot about, okay, how can I make sure that I am respectful with everybody? Because right now, in the current time, sometimes the sensitivities are really, really, really critical about how people might get offended with small changes that in some cases might not have any bad intention behind.
Thank you for that question. I think that one thing, what I love about being able to travel as much as I can and go to different countries is to be able to see the world from different lenses and to be able to understand not only other culture, but also the culture that I was born and raised, where I was coming from, in a very different perspective. And often this sort of new way of thinking would be able to provide me a lot of new insight. And I think that, you know, coming from a place of having the intention of try to understand the world better, but also try to serve the world with the talent that I happen to have. And I believe everybody has their own talent and their own gift. There is this important message. I think it's not that I'm finding it. I think it's finding me. I happened to be born in Shanghai, China, and I was fortunate enough to study overseas in Australia, in Sydney, and also London, UK. And I somehow connected with the technology world in Silicon Valley about more than 10 years ago now. And I was able to work with hundreds of startups in the last 10 years and traveling to 20 countries. But the more that I travel, the more I saw things that have a lot of things in common. Obviously that I'm experiencing a lot of cultural diversity, you know, whether going to Korea and Japan in East Asia and seeing the differentiation of other Eastern Asian country that is different from China. But in the meantime, what I also see is the uniformity, which is there's this human quality that all countries are having in common, whether it's a Lyft driver from Pakistan driving me in San Francisco or a Russian driver in London that is moving to London like 30 years ago for their children to have a better life. I think people migrate and people travel, people move to places, ultimately they wanted to have a better life, or they want their children and offspring to have a better life. And having that in mind and knowing people are coming from very different background, having those understanding is definitely helping me to create the work that speaks to people, even though I don't necessarily speak their language. So that's kind of my philosophy, whether I'm designing a logo for my previous VC firm in India, which I don't necessarily speak the language, but having that sense of curiosity when I started the project, I know that I don't speak the language, and I know that there's a lot of things that I don't know. And being able to have that awareness that I know what I know, and I know what I don't know, but I don't know what I don't know. So when I was working on the project, for example, with 500 in India, I know there will be a lot of things that I have no idea of. And luckily, I had that awareness and I asked people. So when I was collaborating with the Indian team, I actually make sure that I don't have the assumption that the logo that I'm going to design is going to be in Hindi, because I think a lot of people probably know that in China, people speak Mandarin as the official language and people know about Hindi, but Hindi is not necessarily the only official language in India. What's really funny is that when I was doing the design, I created the design, I obviously using Google Translator, but I also double check with my team in India and show them, okay, this is what Google tells me, but what is this correct? Is this locally recognizable? Is this culturally sensitive? And people are like, yes, this is actually okay, but just so you know, the Hindi is not the only language we speak here as the official language. We actually have more than 20 official languages and not everybody speaks Hindi. Also, the Arabic number 5 in Hindi actually looks like a 4. The form of the Arabic number in Hindi language actually is the form like Arabic 4. And so all these things are absolutely mind-blowing and it's fascinating, right? So I had to really consult with the team and redesign everything within that 20 different major languages. And eventually I solved the design challenge using combination of colors and shapes and have like all these additional major language around the 500 global icon. So that's basically a good example to illustrate that you know what you know and you know what you don't know, but often you don't know what you don't know. And that's where other people come in. That's where you should do user testing. That's where you should do survey. That's where you should ask people from very different background to give you feedbacks. When you do a technology, you know, implementation, especially I think in another country, do localization test. And it's always, always, always very important to do user testing. And so that's basically how I look at designing for a global audience. As the world is becoming smaller and smaller, we all living on the internet in a lot of ways. There are so many things that other people can chime in and provide value. And it's about having the awareness and understand that you don't have to know everything. What you need to know is you need to ask the experts from that country, from that culture, to give you input.
So I think the last year we've seen a few cases of design problems. They were actually pretty mediatic, particularly in China, where with some foreign brands, they had some campaigns that they were not very well received. And curiously, I mean, these brands, I don't know the details behind the campaigns and how they were created, but the truth is that these brands, they have local staff. I mean, these brands, they have a relevant operation in the market. What are your thoughts about those examples?
Right. I think it depends on what case study we're talking about. And I think that there is actually a lot of really interesting case studies over the year that I've been collecting. One of the really funny story was back in the days when Nike entered the China market, there was these customized Nike shoes that has all these lucky Chinese characters on the shoes. The research team actually did research and user testing with the users and find out that Chinese people like to have all these lucky Chinese symbols, like fa means prosperity, and luck, which is jixiang, and fu, which everybody loves it, fortune. And what's really funny is that they didn't know that when you put fa, which is prosperity, with fu, which is fortune, when you put these two characters together, it means getting fat. So it was hilarious when they had these mix-mash shoes that some of the shoes actually put it together. It creates this combo word meaning getting fat. And so the people who receive the shoes are not necessarily happy, and the sales result wasn't the expected result the designers or the marketers was hoping for. And so that was a very funny, but also a very real story to show that sometimes you needed to have additional people outside of the circle to give you some insight. And even for me, I think that working on the Phoenix project with China Accelerator, that's actually a really good story. Eva can tell you about that. So I was working with Eva and Gabe on the Phoenix Rising because we wanted to celebrate the 10th anniversary of China Accelerator. That's an amazing achievement and a milestone. So I had this idea of creating this Phoenix on the t-shirt, and the English title of this art piece was Keep Rising because we want the companies to really rising from all the challenges and any obstacles and keep being this resilient phoenix, right? And so we have the English translation into Chinese. Basically, it says going to a higher place with a lot of courage. And when we were doing the translation of flying to a higher place, the direct Chinese translation is flying high. And so at the time, Gabe, who also speaks Chinese, who was growing up in the Southeast, and he speaks Chinese Mandarin, in a literal translation is flying high. But flying high, he doesn't know that in mainland China, fly is fei, right? High is gao. So when you put it together, gao fei is literally the Chinese translation of Goofy in Disneyland. And that has been the longest time all mainland Chinese people know about the Goofy dog in the Disneyland is called Gao Fei in Chinese. But that piece of knowledge, even though you speak Mandarin in any other parts of the world, if you're not growing up in mainland, you probably don't have that piece of knowledge. And that's where you have to ask around. And I happened to be in that conversation. And this is how we avoid to create cultural mix-mash. So we choose a different translation in the end.
That's a really interesting story because I did have that experience in the past with some of my overseas-born Chinese friends that they speak Chinese at home and their Mandarin is really good. But I mean, after like more than a decade living in China, I knew Gao Fei because of my kids. And I actually knew a lot of brands, like regular brands, names in Chinese. And some of these friends, even if their Mandarin is way better than mine, they are not aware of those brands. So it's a very interesting aspect. But I mean, this is, I think, something that a lot of people has talked a lot. The fact that China has a very unique culture and sometimes an understanding that is very local. Like even in this case, I think that's a really good example, know how you might speak the language, but then you don't know some of the brands that are locally developed. Have you seen also this situation with Chinese brands abroad? Because I mean, one of the things that we've seen in China, and we had one of the founders of Design, which is a local design technology company, coming here, and he was talking about how the number of designers per the ratio designer engineer in Chinese companies have been growing dramatically in the last 10 years, as in Chinese companies are putting more and more value in design. But have you seen any cases of Chinese companies expanding internationally now that this Zhuhai movement is very, very relevant? And what would be like some suggestions for Chinese founders when they have to like evaluate their designs abroad?
Right. I think that's a very good question. And I wanted to answer this question in a more sort of general way. It's not only just apply for Chinese company, but yes, Chinese company is what we are sort of targeting to because China Accelerator is based in China. Because I've been working with so many global companies, I always like to see it from a global perspective, right? I think that it is very important to know who you're talking to, who's your target audience. And also at the end of the day, it's basically matching whatever you know from the country that you're growing up with and collecting all these knowledges and not assuming anything when you enter into a new market and prepare that people are going to give you new challenges. I'll give you a very good example to illustrate that. When I was working with a company that is actually based in East Bay, it was a Chinese founder. At the time when we were working on this logo, his request is, I wanted to create this logo. I always love the story of Gui Tu Sai Pao, which is the hare and the turtle. And the turtle always wins because even though the hare the rabbit that goes faster, but the turtle has so much resilience and hardworking, and eventually it wins. So I want to create this logo for my co-working space that is turtle with wings, right? So that's just a very beautiful analogy, and it's a beautiful picture. So when I was like working on this concept, I suspect something wasn't quite right. I was like, I don't know why, but I feel like it's a very poetic way of approaching that design brief. So I created the illustration and I showed it to him. He's like, I love it. Let's use it. And I said, let's hold on a moment. Let's go around and ask people locally, ask the American potential users, potential co-working space residents, right? So I show this to people and the first comeback is, wow, this really reminds me of the evil turtle in the Super Mario. And I was like, that's why I didn't feel right in the first place, right? And that is a piece of context that the Chinese founder didn't think of in the first place, let alone he's an older generation. He had never played Super Mario. He would have no idea what you're talking about. But because of you did that user testing, you're asking the target demographics, who are the younger generation who are born and raised in the US or born and raised in other country that happen to be in the US that also potentially become the residents. They will give you that piece of feedback. And so we had to redesign that logo completely to resolve that and still kept it relevantly sort of inspiring, but not necessarily using the combination of the turtle with wings. So that's a very simple and a very straightforward sort of a story to illustrate that point. A lot of times when you're running your company overseas, you will run into interesting cultural experiences that you don't have. And that's where, again, be humble and assume nothing. And also not having that position. We're a US company. When we're coming to China, we got to do our US way. And it's not going to necessarily work because the country is different. The custom of people is different. And similarly, if your business model works fantastically in China or other parts of the world, when you go to a different country like US, do not assume everything is going to be the same and prepare for any challenges will come your way.
Ian, thank you very much for sharing. So if anybody wants or is interested in contacting with you because they have design needs or they want to have somebody give them some thoughts or evaluate anything that they've been working on to try to explore potential risks, how can they contact you?
They can find me on LinkedIn, which is my name, Yiying Lu, Y-I-Y-I-N-G for the first name and L-U for the last name. My name in Chinese, Yiying, Yi means happy and Ying means creative. So that's how you remember my name. You guys can also find me on Instagram. And also if you use Twitter, you can also find me on Twitter. I'm Yiying Lu everywhere. If you want to send me a private message, you can also go to my website, which is yiyinglu.com, and go to contact and you can send a message to me. I would love to see how I might be able to help and provide more value.
Thank you very much for sharing today, Yin.
Thank you, Oscar. Thanks for having me.
I just want to take a minute to thank our sponsors. China Accelerator is the number one accelerator in Asia. Not only were they the first accelerator in China, but they were the first accelerator in all of Asia. They help companies expand and grow into the China market, and Chinese companies grow into the global market. They're also the only accelerator in Asia to have a unicorn come out of it. To find out more, go to www.chinaaccelerator.com. And thank you to People's Square, the original and first co-working space in China. Based here in Shanghai, it is the ideal place for movers and shakers, teams big and small, to find a place where the entrepreneurial spirit and culture lives to call home. You can find out more by going to people-squared.com.